Welcome to the Nonprofit Mastermind Podcast. I'm Brooke Ritchie Babbage. I've been in the social impact game for 25 years as a social justice lawyer turned two-time nonprofit founder and leader turned growth strategist and coach for leaders around the country. I grew my nonprofit from me and an intern in a tiny closet to a high-impact seven-figure organization. And along the way, I learned so much about how to build an organization that has real impact and how to do it without burning out. In this podcast, I share the nuts and bolts of all of it so you can do that too. We dive into the mindset, strategies, and tactics of how to scale a high-impact organization and how to do it in a way that's truly sustainable. This month, I'm doing a deep dive into how to operationalize leverage in your leadership. We're almost a quarter of the way through the year, and more people are feeling the urgency of not wanting to lose sight of the goals and aspirations that they came into the year with. So I'm doing a mini series this month about leverage, and specifically high leverage leadership. As I like to say, what got you here won't get you to wherever you're trying to go next. If you want to step into the kind of leadership practices that support real growth without burnout, I've got a roadmap. There are mindsets and frameworks and practices that have been found time and time again to work. And by work, I mean to help leaders spend as much time engaged in high leverage activities as possible. So this week, I'm talking about how to schedule for leverage. What should your calendar look like? Specifically, I'm going to talk about three approaches to scheduling that high leverage leaders use to get out of the weeds and to find time for visioning, planning, and other high leverage activities. I invite you to think about how you can apply these in your own scheduling and in your own leadership, either in practice today or aspirationally as a benchmark for where you want to get to. Now, I go deeper into this whole idea of leverage in a few of my other podcasts, and I've pulled them together into a curated sort of mini playlist for you. You can get that at brookritchiebabbage.com/leverage playlist. I also include an entire step-by-step guide for how to do everything I'm talking about in this episode inside my new strategy bundle released this month, March. It's the Leveraged Leadership Strategy Bundle. It includes how to plan your own CEO day, like a visioning or planning staff retreat, except just for you, how to form a mastermind, how to do self-coaching that is effective at actually sort of unearthing and navigating some of those mindset gremlins that get in the way of our growth, how to do strategic annual and quarterly planning for yourself, and a breakdown of how three of my favorite business books apply to our sector and to leverage leadership, from growing your community to designing your signature talk and building your thought leadership. You can get that entire bundle at brookritchiebabbage.com/leverage bundle. Okay, so first, scheduling for energy, not just time. That's the first strategy I want to talk about. Scheduling for energy, not just time. One of the mistakes so many of us make is only accounting for hours in the day when we add things to our calendar. The problem with this is that that's just not how our brains or bodies work. So many of you who are working hard to grow your budget, manage your board, lead your team, all of the things, you're doing it by putting in more hours. As a result, you and your team are probably tiptoeing right up to the edge of burnout. And ultimately, that actually undermines your growth, your effectiveness, and the sustainability both of you and the organization. The problem is that for many people, we take for granted, and I include myself in this because this is a perennial struggle, we take for granted what actually fuels our capacity to work. And that's our energy. Being mindful of that capacity is actually the best way to get more done faster and better. The fact is that while time is finite, energy is not. It can be expanded, it can be deepened, and most importantly, energy can be renewed. Now, when you're thinking about this in concrete terms, there are actually four different types of energy to think about. There are four different types of energy that we use and can renew as we go through a day or a week: physical, emotional, spiritual, and psychological. Now, your brain and body naturally want to spend that energy, those different kinds of energy, on different things at different times of the day. Similarly, different activities both use and renew these different kinds of energy. So what you want to do is map your natural energy flow so that the work that you're doing in a day or a week is naturally aligned with the work you're most naturally suited to do during that time. For example, are there certain times of the day when it makes sense for you to do a workout or to go for a walk? For example, if you have two sort of really intense discussions or really long meetings, maybe putting a walk or a stretching workout or even just 5 minutes of sort of bending and stretching and circling your chair right in the middle of those two activities, that's a renewal of your physical energy, right? Are there certain times of day when meetings feel like they're more in flow, when it makes sense to be more social, to focus on collaborations, partnerships? I know for me, there are times of the day when I do my best creative and deep thinking, and that's in the morning. So I don't schedule meetings in the morning because I know that my natural energy flow is such that my brain wants to be engaged in deep, sort of complex, messy thinking. It's the least intimidating time, the least overwhelming time for my brain to do that. So I want to plan my schedule to support that. For you, when are the times of the day when you find that your energy is at its lowest, when you really just sort of need to disengage or wind down? Right? Those are things that you want to pay attention to as you are mapping your meetings, your workouts, your collaborations, your time for deep thought. What's the natural energy flow that your body wants to be in? You also want to think about how you're using each of these four kinds of energy as part of that energy map and how you are and are not replenishing them. Leaders find that they get more bang for their proverbial buck of sort of time, energy, et cetera, if they're mindful about building in rituals that renew each of these kinds of energy. Things like, and I mentioned this brief, walks, stretching, things like healthy snacking, working out, good sleep practices. These are things we all know we're supposed to do, but they actually impact our physical energy, which we know. That matters. Right? When we are talking about burnout, when we're talking about supporting our team to avoid burnout, when we're talking about that sense of overwhelm that we can all feel when we look around at all of the tiny little fires that we think we have to put out, we actually feel more capable of navigating all of that. Our brain tells us we are more capable when we have renewed that physical part of our energy. So it actually has practical implications. Things like practicing gratitude, expressing appreciation to the people that you work with, sending a little card, throwing a half an hour party for your team that just says thank you, calling a board member to say, I loved that meeting you set up, just thank you. Spending time in your zone of genius, doing things that are at the intersection of things you actually really enjoy about your work and that connect you to its purpose and that you do really well, right? That's your zone of genius. Things like that have been shown to help renew emotional energy, right? That other bucket, that second bucket of kinds of energy. Interestingly, when we talk about psychological energy, research has found that it's actually fueled by deep work, by engaging in what I would call a lot of the high leverage activities. So blocking time, and I'm going to talk about this in a moment, blocking time for focused, uninterrupted deep thinking work, visioning, planning, identifying the most challenging or long-term project on your plate and spending an hour a day only working on that. Things that build towards bigger outcomes but don't necessarily allow you to check a box at the end of the day. I find it fascinating that research has found time and time again that engaging in that kind of thinking and work every day is actually what renews your psychological energy, right? It does it by connecting you to that part of your brain that wants to settle into something, right? That doesn't want to switch between things. by making you feel like you are actually making progress on some of these bigger projects. And even if we aren't aware of it, that narrative, that positive, we're moving forward, we're actually making our way up the hill, that's working in the background, giving you energy. Finally, renewing your spiritual energy is really about making sure that you find ways to connect to your deeper why. Most of us can work beyond hard, as long as we understand what we're working towards. What's the purpose being served? The upshot of all of this is that you want to use an understanding of your energy to guide when and how you should naturally show up for certain kinds of work. And you want to be intentional about making sure to build into your schedule time and rituals to give you back that capacity that you need for leverage, right? So this first high leverage strategy that we have seen in all high leverage leaders is they pay attention to their energy, not just hours in the day, when they are scheduling what to do and when. The second strategy is time blocking, and specifically time blocking using Big Rock's philosophy, which I'm a huge fan of. This is a huge strategy for making time for high leverage work. It does no good to know what high leverage activities are, even if you identify your most important projects, goals, and initiatives. It does no good to know them if you can't make time to work on them, right? You can know them, but if you don't do anything about them, nothing changes. The problem is the tyranny of the urgent. We are all inundated with a million tasks and obligations, and they all feel important, sometimes equally so. It's really hard to prioritize, particularly in the moment. Here's an interesting trivia point that a friend shared with me a few years ago, and I just love. The word priority actually entered the English language via Old French sometime in the 14th century. I'm a history buff, so I love this kind of thing. It comes from the medieval Latin word prioritas, fact or condition of being prior. And the word actually meant the most important thing, the prior thing, or the thing with precedence. Now, when people first started using it, the word priority had no plural, right? There's only one most important thing. You could only have one priority. Now, sometime in the middle of the 20th century, and this probably won't come as a surprise to most of you listening, it's almost certainly related to the rise in corporate and office culture and bureaucracy, the word priorities began to appear. Now people began to claim that they had more than one most important thing. They could have 3 or 5 or 15 priorities. The more priorities you have, the harder it is to identify which is the most important. Our brain just doesn't want to do that, right? So as we know, and why I think this is such an interesting and actually relevant trivia point, is in our daily lives, in our weekly lives, the more priorities we have, the easier it is to get sucked into low leverage in the weeds work, right? And the harder it is to sort of lift your head above all of those priorities and tasks and say, but wait a minute, which is the most important one? What do I need to be focused on? High leverage leaders develop the skill, and it is a skill, and it is one we can learn, and it is one that we can master. The skill of prioritizing what to focus on, where to allocate their time and energy, and how to protect that work. This is why the Big Rocks approach to planning is so effective and why I've always really liked it. Stephen Covey actually popularized this idea of Big Rocks in a book that I read decades ago, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It's a really interesting book, and he sort of just walks through sort of what I'm doing here. Big Rocks are your mission-critical, high-leverage objectives. They are the things that you absolutely must move forward and accomplish. They are the most important thing, the priority. They are not items on a messy, sprawling to-do list. They're like your organizational boulders. They're big and they're immovable. They are must-dos. Now, you want to use your big rock list, right? Your identification of the big rocks in your work as a guide for where you should be focusing the majority of your effort and energy in any given week. The next idea in the big rocks sort of framework are your pebbles. These are things that are also important, but they're not essential, right? They are important, but they're not urgent. They're not sort of these organizational boulders. They can shift and they can be moved around to fit around the rocks, right? Rocks go first and you do not move them. You protect them at all costs. The pebbles, important, must be in your calendar, but they fit around the rocks. And then finally, the sand. The sand are things that are the lowest leverage or have the least significant effect on the ultimate outcomes you're trying to achieve, the ultimate impact you're trying to have. Now, the problem for most of us is that the sand and the pebbles are everywhere, and we let them fill up our calendar, and they squeeze out time for high leverage, important work. If you think about a jar that you need to fill sort of with your rocks and your pebbles and your sand, if you fill it with sand, there's no space for rocks, right? What you want to do is you put in the rocks and let the sand and the pebbles fill in around the most important things. And so what that means is you want to be intentional about your calendar and add time to focus on big rocks into your calendar first. I literally have time in my calendar that says big rocks. These are longer blocks of time that are not for things like responding to emails or staff meetings. They are my must-dos and they do not move. Now, after you've scheduled those and locked them in, then turn to the pebbles, map those out, keeping your energy in mind, and then you make time for sand. Now, here I want to offer just a word of gentle caution. You should define what sand is for you. It can be tempting to let other people's urgency and other people's definition of what's important, other people's big rocks and pebbles, define your own. Instead, you need to keep the organizational outcomes and impact that you're trying to achieve front and center in your mind. Ask yourself, what are the highest leverage and most important things I need to do so that I can move towards that impact? And let that guide how you define your rocks, how you define your pebbles, and what you determine is sand. The last one I want to talk about is batching your work instead of multitasking. Batch work can be hard. And I pause there because for most of my life, I have patted myself on the back for being an excellent multitasker. And to a certain extent, I don't think you can lead anything without being good at multitasking. So I am not saying stop multitasking or get rid of that. I think if I said that, people would be like, I'm turning this off. She doesn't know what she's talking about. What I'm saying instead is, if you want to plan your week, right, plan your calendar for maximum leverage, where you look up at the end of the week and you actually feel like, oh, we've made real progress. I've made real progress on the things that matter the most. Then some part of how you organize your time should involve batch work. And you may want to leave time in your calendar for the multitasking because that comes up. But we do our most effective work when we avoid switching costs. And so I'm going to talk about this for a minute. Batch work just means grouping similar tasks together and working on them in batches. For instance, you might batch all of your email responding, right? All of your correspondence into 1 hour at different points in the day, or handle all of your phone calls or pay all of your invoices. Right? Do all of your writing. The reason that it works is because, as I mentioned, it avoids what we call switching costs. The transition from one task to another actually involves real cognitive effort, right? And over time, the more we do it over the course of a day and definitely over the course of a week, it causes genuine mental fatigue, right? And this means that you're not going to do as well on the tasks. You're not going to be able to concentrate as well, right? This is a phenomenon called the switch cost effect. And it's very real. If you sort of map, again, your energy over the course of a day, you might note this as you go through your day. Here's another sort of factoid that I heard the other day that I think really just illustrates this in a fascinating way. If I ask you to count from 1 to 25 as fast as you can probably do that. Most people can do that in about 5 seconds. If I ask you to spell out the alphabet, again, as fast as you can, most people can do that in about 4 seconds. Now, if I ask you to context switch between the two, 1A, 2B, 3C, etc., most people actually lose track before they get to the end. And if they do finish, researchers have found that it takes between 1 and 1.5 minutes to do that. That is 20 times longer because your brain needs to switch, right? It's not just that you lose time, slow yourself down, and lose effectiveness every time you switch between tasks. There are other costs, right? The quality of your work goes down. You're more likely to make mistakes. You're not able to retain as much information. There are so many studies that show that switching between tasks, even things we consider to be minor, actually impairs what they call the encoding of task-relevant information, right? It's what your brain holds on to. If you spend 10 minutes doing something and then switch to something else for 5 minutes, even if you come back to that original thing, research finds that you've retained less of that first 10 minutes, the information you took in the first 10 minutes. So over the course of the day, you're actually not moving forward. The pace in which you're sort of getting work done, retaining information, isn't keeping up with the hours that you've spent, right? And this last point I want to make about this batching, I have found to be really meaningful in my own work and the work that I do with a lot of the leaders in my group. And that's around this idea of flow, right? Getting into a flow state. Getting into a flow state is actually what we want. It's very tied to a lot of my work and research and writing around zone of genius, right? This idea of being completely immersed in an activity that we do well and that we enjoy. That's when we're going to perform our best. And so getting into this flow state actually requires sustained focus on one task. It's way harder to do that when you are multitasking. The other reason that multitasking is really important is it reduces decision fatigue. Now, decision fatigue is another sort of wonky concept like switch cost effect, but it basically means that after making a lot of decisions, your ability to make more decisions goes down. It gets worse. The more decisions you have to make, the more fatigue your brain develops, and the worse you get at making those decisions. And it doesn't actually seem to matter physiologically whether they are big decisions or little decisions. Now, for me, this shows up as foggy brain, right? Irritability, saying no to things that I might want to respond to in a more nuanced way. I know for a lot of people, that's going to resonate. This also shows up as overwhelm. You can seriously reduce decision fatigue by pre-setting your schedules with these time blocks we've talked about, right? With batches, where you know exactly what you're going to do and what goals you have for those blocks of time, and where you put up guardrails against adding anything else to those blocks. You do that pre-thinking and that pre-mapping, then you can sort of, your brain can sort of relax into it, and there's nothing to say yes or no to within those blocks. Now, this is a mindset shift. It's a simple one, but it's really important. Being a high impact, high leverage leader and sustaining yourself is about being intentional about your time. You have to decide that protecting your time and engaging in high leverage work is important. And you have to act accordingly, even if it means changing how you have done things in the past or even getting a little uncomfortable. It can be uncomfortable to say to someone on your staff who pokes their head in, "No, I don't actually have 5 minutes right now. I'm in the middle of some deep thought work for our new partnership with X, Y, and Z, and I can't really break my flow. Why don't you grab some time on my calendar later today? I've blocked time on the shared calendar, and I've called it floating meeting time. I can definitely chat then." Right? You can say those words, but you can also feel really weird about them, right? That might be a change for you and for your team. It can be hard to say, but when you get good at it, you'll find that you feel more in control of your time and the impact that you're able to have. Now, I mention all of that because reducing the decision fatigue, reducing the effect of switching between multiple things, multitasking, energy mapping, and leaning into and protecting time for big rocks, everything we've talked about today requires that mindset shift. It requires that you predetermine the right calendar to protect and support your ability to engage in high leverage work, and that you be willing to protect it. So just to recap, we talked about three strategies that high leverage leaders, we found that they use these strategies to support their ability to sit in high leverage work and to engage in high leverage work. First, scheduling for energy, not just time. Second, using time blocks specifically organized around big rocks. And third, time batching, right? Batching your work instead of multitasking, or task batching instead of multitasking. You can get the play-by-play for all of this in the Leverage Leadership Strategy Bundle at brookwithgbabbage.com/leverage bundle. And I also encourage you to do a deeper dive into this whole concept of leverage by listening to the curated playlist that I've developed at brookwithgbabbage.com/leverage playlist. That's it for this week, and I will see you back here next week, where we will be talking about another set of frameworks that high leverage leaders use to get more return on their investment of energy. Have a great week. Thanks so much for joining me this week. If you enjoy this podcast, I would love for you to leave a rating and a review. I read every single one, and they really do matter. I also share extra tidbits and resources building on what we talk about here in my newsletter, Leadership Forward 321. You can sign up by texting the word IMPACT to 66866. And finally, definitely check out the links and resources that I mentioned in this episode at brookwithgbabbage.com/podcast. See you next week.